You have been sitting here for 1.5 hours, alhamdulillah, right? Understand that you could have been anywhere else. There's a tournament taking place right next door. You sit in here. So you can say, no, it's because my mommy sent me here, I have to sit. Or because there's roll call, I have to sit here, right? But the fact of the matter is, Allah Ta'ala has chosen you to be here. And Allah Ta'ala choosing you to be here shows that Allah Ta'ala has a deep love for you. Basically, in thousands of young men who could have been here today, you've been hand-picked by Allah Ta'ala to be here. That's how special you are to Allah Ta'ala. Now that love needs to be reciprocated. You need to love Allah Ta'ala. Allah Ta'ala is telling you, I love you. I'm bringing you here. I'm bringing you here. Allah has chosen you. You must understand, just next door, this is not to, we're not looking down upon anybody, but you need to realize what your value is sitting here. Allah Ta'ala has brought you here, handpicked that you be here and sit and listen to this. Right. Thirdly, I was given advice by someone the other day, and I thought I'd just say this. He mentioned that in he saw them, that my name will be appear on the youth poster, the youth program poster. So he said, you know, when you speak to the youth, you must be very careful, because I was sitting in a youth program, and he spoke against the soccer star. And by the time he finished his sentence, half of them had left. Right. I said, okay. He said, be very careful, we need the youth, and you mustn't speak against what they like, because you will cause dislike in their hearts for them when you need them. I said, okay. But now, something else triggered a thought in my mind. Brothers, throughout the rest of your life, you're going to hear things you don't like. Right? It's going to come from your mother. She's going to tell you, chef, not chef, she won't call you chef, but wherever you are, pick up your socks, put it away. Your father is going to tell you, don't do this, don't do that. Your ustad is going to tell you. Your wife is going to tell you for the rest of your life. And most of the time she's going to be right, correct? Most of the time she's going to be right. Where to correct yourself? Along the way in your path of life, many, many people are going to correct you. If what they, don't look at who's telling you, look at what is being said, if it's correct. Right? You can't get angry when something is being, especially when it is established in Quran and Sunnah. To get angry and walk out from that, you might best be turning yourself away from Hidayat. Right? So understand, sit and listen to what's being said. And know that when someone tells you something like this, it's not from dislike, it's not to put you down, it's because he loves you. Anybody who tells you that something is wrong is because they love you. Your parents, your ustads, the mashayikh. It's because there's deep love for you and they only want success for you. This world cover and akhirah. So, open up, because you see the thing is nowadays everybody's very sensitive. Very, very sensitive. We've all become touchy-feely. Men wearing makeup, all of that kind of stuff, right? It's made us feminine, right? This is what it's all about. So we become too sensitive to things around us. And as we go through life, when we hear things we don't like, we start getting emotionally affected. Imagine men using the word emotional. It's not, every man is now emotionally affected, then depression and all that. It doesn't work. You need to understand that through your life you'll be hearing things you don't like. It shouldn't affect you negatively, it should affect you positively. You've got to pick yourself up and think, is this in me? Allahu Akbar, you know, Ma'adul Hamida example. Sometimes things get written against things we do, right? For example, jalsas maybe, whatever it may be. Mulana will nitpick and say, right, what are we doing that's going wrong here? Not shove it away, I don't like what this person is saying. He introspects and sees, let's see how we can improve. And this is the example we need to follow. When somebody tells you something, don't shun it, don't become angry about it. وَيَتَّخِذَهَا هُزُوَا وَقَالَ رَسُولُ اللَّهِ صَلَى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمُ نِعْمَتَانِ مَغْبُونٌ فِيهِمَا كَثِيرٌ مِنَ النَّاسِ الصِّحَّةُ وَالْفَرَاغُ وكما قال عليه الصلاة والسلام. I have to speak a little bit fast, so try and keep up, right, because lunch is at 12. Everything that gets discussed in this jalsa, everything that you've heard about, everything that any speaker speaks about, is about the heart. It concerns the heart. It's about not the physical heart that you go to university and med school for. Here we're talking about the spiritual heart, something that's more important. Right? The spiritual heart is being spoken about. And the heart is the king. The heart is the king of insan. We're not just saying of the human body, we're talking about insan. The heart is the king. Why? Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam said, إِذَا صَلَحَتْ صَلَحَ الْجَسَدُ وَإِذَا فَسَدَ فَسَدَ الْجَسَدُ كُلُّهُ. Why? Because if the heart is correct, then this whole insan, everything about him becomes correct. وَإِذَا فَسَدَ, and if the heart is corrupt, then in turn, in his entire being is corrupt. Right? So now you need to understand that if the heart has such power, that if that one portion of the human being, that heart, the spiritual heart is incorrect, then it affects everything, the whole being of the human. We're not just talking about body, we're talking about his whole entire being being affected, right? It is obvious from there that the greatest attack of fitna will be on the heart. Understand? The fitna will be great, because also the heart is the place of iman. So it is obvious that the attack on the heart will be the greatest. Right? And at times we don't know how we don't even think that this is an attack upon us. Right? So now I need you to understand what has been done to us. I'll explain to you. Just take it as they. They've taken us and they've occupied occupied our time. So if you look at a general person's life, 8 to 5, 9 to 4, 9 to 5, whatever it may be, he's concerned or he's occupied in survival. Right? Survival, he's either working, whatever it may be. But it's just to try to survive. Right? They've occupied us in that. And around those times, 8 to 5, 8, whatever it may be, he's trying to get to work, coming back from work. Even a person going to school, going to university. A parent never sends his child to school or university to better his akhlaq, for him to become a better Muslim, a better human being. The only reason why you would be sent to school is for your dunya, for university. Let's be honest about this, right? At times there might be some, they'll tell you this, but the primary intention is never ever for you to become a better Muslim, a better person, to better your akhlaq. It's all for dunya. So this whole thing they've occupied, your whole school day, your whole working day, is occupied in dunya, in trying to survive. And then, the ayah we mentioned, وَمِنَ النَّاسِ مَنْ يَشْتَرِي لَهْوَ الْحَدِيثِ يُضِلَّ عَنْ سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ. This is not a translation. But in our time, basically there are people who've invested billions and billions and billions of dollars in just to occupy people's free time. Understand? Your other time has been taken away. To occupy your free time, there's billions and billions of dollars that's been invested just to take your free time. And this is referred to as the entertainment industry, the sport industry. Basically, billions of dollars have been put into distracting you. Distracting you from what? From the remembrance of Allah Ta'ala, from what you should be doing at a certain time. Right? So, as young men, we'll just focus on one portion of this that affects us. If you look at the sport industry, it captivates us. Like most of us, all of us captivate us. We become deeply immersed in it. If you look at the average football fan, right, take, now we're not in the masjid, so I'll take a season, 9.5 months, middle of August till May. If a person just follows one team, right, we're talking maybe just a Premiership game and the Champions League game in week. Now we're talking open, right? Champions League game, this is nothing else. Okay, there guys laughing, so they know what we're talking about here. A person will watch, in 9.5 months, he would have watched 13 full working days of football. Spend 13 full 8-hour working days watching football in 9.5 months. Right? So that excludes Formula One. That excludes cricket. Five-day test matches. Right? 2020. Now obviously, because we're in this world of instant gratification, 2020. So you get your hooked on for that. That excludes Formula One, it excludes MotoGP. It excludes perhaps the tournament in June, the World Cup or European Championships, whatever it may be. So we're only talking football, that kind of thing. It excludes women's tennis, right? Because men watch women's tennis what? The quality of the what? The tennis, right? Isn't it? Gee. Yeah. Gee, so what's the effect? Remember we spoke about it having an effect on life. The first effect is that we begin to talk about these people so much about the attributes, so much skill, so far, so high, so much. The greatness of these people enter our heart, and we forget that the greatness of Allah Ta'ala is being called to us 5 times a day. The greatness of our heart is removed because why? All we're talking about is how fast he is, how skillful he is, how much he earns, what he's driving, what he's wearing. Right. This eventually begins to develop a love in the heart for those people, for these people, right? To such an extent that it's possible that a player died last month in his Lamborghini Catfish. And some people would have had more sorrow in their heart for that player dying than what's happening in Palestine at the moment. That's the reality of the situation. Because our hearts are closer to these people than to actually many around the world. Then take it further. Because we talk so much about it, and we love them so much, eventually we refer to them as the what? The GOAT. Huh? G-O-A-T. Greatest of all time. That's it. That's what's going around now. The greatest of all time, the GOAT. When it is Allah Ta'ala who tells us who's the greatest. Allah Ta'ala has mentioned in the Quran numerous ayat about the Anbiya being the greatest of all creation. Nabiya Kareem sallallahu alayhi wa sallam being the greatest. But this is removed from our heart completely. Why? Because automatically we have start seeing this person is the GOAT. That person is the GOAT. That person is the GOAT. But what does Allah Ta'ala do to GOAT? Right. Listen. GOAT gets slaughtered. There was one, you need to understand, I'm going to say this now and I'm going to say this again. You need to understand the concept we're talking about. We're not talking about individuals here. Right? There was a man who was, we're not going to mention his name. He was known to be the fastest man on four wheels, 7 world championships. In a skiing accident, he ended up in a coma. Till today, he's not seen to the public. Right? Because he can't even speak. Millions and millions of dollars. This is Allah Ta'ala deals with goats. Like when we put them up on these pedestals. There was a man who was known for his extreme vehicle control, right? Gymkhana, drifting around mountain tops and going through different things. Extreme car control. Maybe I can't remember, a year or two back, he dies in what? In a, what do you call those things? A mobile ski, motorized, I can't remember what you call it, but he dies when he's supposed to be in complete control of vehicle, he died on a vehicle. There was a man who was known for being able to handle, he was the GOAT in handling wild animals. Right? Well known around the world. How does he die? A stingray. While he's swimming. While he's swimming, a stingray just puts up its stinger right through his body and he dies. This is how the GOAT die. Right? Allah Ta'ala reminds us who are the GOATs. Who are the greatest of all time? Allah is the greatest and Allah declares who is the greatest. And this is what needs to be in our heart all the time. We cannot carry on with our lives talking about these people all the time. Their manaqib saying who they are, what they are. Because this love develops instead to such an extent in the heart. Now, this obsession in the heart develops so much. Right? And we don't even know about it. Because this is one aspect you just need to apply your mind a little here. Rijaliyat, manhood, is being taken out of us. Understand that physically, we still, in terms of sports, physically, we still have the equipment that tells us we're men. But when you become obsessed with sports, your heart and your mind, in your heart and your mind, it's been slipped off, if you understand what I'm saying. We've been sterilized, we've been neutralized. How? I tell you like this. Every boy, every man who's obsessed with sport, whether you're playing, whether you're watching, for him the highest achievement that the physical body can reach, the highest glory that the physical body can reach is what? Picking up a trophy, kissing it in front of billions of people, lifting up a belt, title championship. That's the highest, that's the peak his physical body can achieve while he's watching sports, while he's engrossed in sports. Mulana mentioned it. What, according to us, for a man, a Muslim man, is the highest accolade, the highest achievement he can achieve with his physical body? Anybody? Shahadat. 100%. How many of us are not thinking of it? Because our mind has been conditioned, our hearts have been conditioned to think this is what it is. Right? And then we take it. We even ourselves, we start to deform deen because of this. So we say there's a thing like sunnah sport, right? Archery, horse riding, whatever it is, came in the hadith, so we call it sunnah sport. By saying sunnah sport, listen, sport, this is the definition you'll find. It's an activity involving physical exertion and skill in which an individual or team competes against each other. What? for entertainment or as a job. When you say what the Sahaba radiallahu anhu did was sports, you've actually taken that activity out from what they, you've completely degraded the activity for what they've done it for. Sahaba radiallahu anhu didn't engage in archery or horse riding to lift a belt or to lift a trophy. This they did so that their manhood was built. They became rijal from it. Men to go out where? E'la'i kalimatillah. To raise the kalima of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. None of that. So we need to be aware of ourselves also, what we do into this, what our heart and mind are being. Right. Now, when we look at, again, I'm going to tell you how this is fashioned, how it worked. See, when anybody or any of us, when we see a Muslim excelling, our heart inclines towards him, whatever field it may be. Right. If you look now, at this moment in time in sports, last week, PFA Player of the Year, 2024-25, who? The Muslim. Right? They smile, they know who it is. Right? Last week, UFC 3, whatever it is, 319, who was it? Everybody knows? Yeah. The Muslim. There is his name, right? Jim. Understand what's going on here. Automatically our heart, we want to see a Muslim succeed. But we forget what environment this is in. Right? These are not our heroes. Right, if you look at sport, soccer, now you can name probably in any country or in most teams how many top footballers are actually Muslim. Right? Again, I tell you we're not talking about individuals here. You need to understand this. You need to understand the concept. Step back from the individual and understand the concept I'm telling you. This might be a little bit for the younger audience, but step back and understand the concept that we're telling you here. This is not about an individual. We're not talking about individuals. We're talking about the concept here. So, in the football field, how many are now top-flight Muslim footballers from France, from Algeria, Tunisia, all of them, right? Playing in the top teams, or achieving top accolades. Cricket, no need to say. No need to say, we know, right? UFC, got it. All of these things is Muslims. Now I ask you, anybody here, we're not saying lift your hand, we're not saying admit you that the sports watch them. It's in all of us. How many Jews do you know who are in the top flight of this sport? Through your life, try to think how many, on one hand, how many Jews you know have actually been put in, who have actually been top achievers in sport. Very few, right? You can't name it on your hand, if you can. Right? Why? Because they refer to us as the goyim, the cattle, scum. In an interview, I can't remember what the man's name was, he said, this is how we control the goyim. Understand this. There's a saying that goes, it's an old saying that goes, give them bread and circuses and they will never revolt. Meaning give them to eat and entertain them and they will never turn against you when you do something wrong. This is what happened to us. We're completely immersed in this entertainment, in the sports. We can't even think. We can't even think what it means to sacrifice our life because our limit has been to what? A trophy. A belt. That's what it is. Right, understand, we're not talking about individuals here again. So let me tell you how it is. I have to read this out here, because I can't remember these details. Firstly, regardless of whether it's Muslim or non-Muslim, these people are not our role models. And they are not our heroes. Again, we're not talking about individuals, we're talking about what they're doing. We cannot have love for what they're doing. Two people in an octagon beating each other up for a couple of $1 million, that's not us. That's not what we do. That's not what we should aspire to do. Regardless of whether the name Palestine is taken, the beer is cream, whatever it may be, we're not discussing the Islam of a person, we're not discussing his diniyat, we're not discussing any of that. That's in its place. We are discussing the concept here. We can't be following in that way of life. Understand this. Why? Look here. If you look at just the UFC, right? The UFC is owned by a company called TKO. TKO. And TKO is then owned by a company called Endeavor Holding. I'm mentioning names here. It's on the internet. You can go see it. The owner, the CEO of Endeavor Holding is Ari Emanuel, a Jew. Right? So Ari's father in the 1930s and 1940s was a pediatrician. Was a pediatrician in where? In the Irgun. Where? In Palestine. He was basically part of a Jewish Zionist paramilitary group, which means they were a terrorist group. And they weren't called a terrorist group by any other country, they were called a terrorist group by Israel for killing civilians. So their father was this man, Ari Emanuel. His father was this man whose name was Benjamin. Right. Now, if you look at how they pull in the strings, how they control it behind and just leaving us to absorb all of this, to let our lives go completely in waste in entertainment and sport. Mexico has less than 1% of a Jewish population, 50,000 people. Mexico has a female Jewish president. It just goes by like this. Right. Argentina has only 100 to 2,000 Jews, 100 to 200,000 Jews. Right. Perhaps even a percentage of the population. Who is the president of Argentina? A Jew. Understand that what's happening is a complete system of control. If we don't pull out of it ourselves, we're going to be immersed in it. Now I tell you, what's the harm of this? You tell me, Mossad, it's because you unfit and you're a little bit fat that you're jealous of these people and all this. Not like this. See here. I'm going to say this straight out. Allah forgive me. It shouldn't be that when the time of Mahdi comes, our progenies are fighting on the wrong side. Because our hearts and minds are being molded into a complete way of the kuffar. You say, how is this, Malika? How many a parent would rather put on a soccer kit with the name of a kafir on his back running around than he would put a kurta on a child? Understand where the mind and the heart. Understand where the heart and the mind are going now. What are we doing? It's not something to take lightly. I tell you, the attack is in disguise. Completely. Your child's name is Muhammad. You're saying you look like Ronaldo when you kick that ball. A kafir. Of course he's messy. Because he doesn't know how to make his finger. His pants is definitely messy. How can we follow these people? Allah Ta'ala give us the tawfiq. The thing is, you think now that I'm telling you as you, there are people who are 50, 60, 70, who are still worried about what the fixture is. Who's won, who's not won. Their lives are still revolving around it. In the masjid, just outside the masjid, they're talking about it. At the bakery, they're talking about it. Wherever it may be, people are engrossed completely. At 70 years of age, you still put in your free time, not in the remembrance of Allah Ta'ala, everybody's close to death. But at the age of 70, you know your time is soon. Right? You still put in your free time into haram. Because this thing, everything has got, it's got haram in it. Whether you like to admit it or not, people say no. Sometimes maybe in cricket, no, chef, they're wearing long pants there, so the sitter is covered. Right, it's all women, music, it's all got haram elements. The heart becomes desensitized to all of this. It becomes normal in our life. It becomes completely normal in our life. So by the time, if you don't get this out of your system now, you'll still be living 60, 70, whether you're doing kitab, whether you're in the Tabligh Jamaat, in the Khanqah, whatever it is, you'll be sitting at night. We won't even go into the other industry that comes with all of this. You'll be sitting at night checking scores, checking highlights, all of this. Why? Your heart is completely attached to all of this. You can't get out of it. We'll end up going to Salah. Mawlana spoke about Salah. Salah is the means to keep us away from fahsha and munkar. Right? It keeps a person away from sin, from immorality. All of this, a person, when his salah is correct in his life, then his heart automatically identifies that this is not right, even though it presents itself correctly. Even though it seems harmless, he's got a gauge in his heart, he tells him, no, this is not right. This is not right. So two things, salah. Adam Mawlana mentioned, sohbat of the awliya. Their heart, understand this, right? Their hearts are so clean that Allah Ta'ala allows them to see things which we do not see. In their words are so deep because, you correct me if I'm wrong, right? This is just my thinking. Their hearts are so clean that Allah Ta'ala has given them such a big share of that wirathat of the Anbiya, right? That even in their kalam, even in their words, they've got the jawami and kalim, right? There's so much meaning behind it. They tell you, stay away from the lifestyle of the kuffar. Simple. Stay away from the lifestyle of the kuffar. 8 words. In it, you'll never be asked to boycott. Because you know, I no one has to tell you don't drink coke, or boycott pill, or boycott this. Because in your heart you know this is wrong already. He said